5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
American Pharoah's got a two-length lead. Frosted is all out at the 16th pole. And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the triple crown.
All right, Vic Espinoza. I want to say right at the top, the winning triple crown jockey will be my special live guest in about 20 minutes. Don't miss that. Victor Espinoza, the man who rode American Pharoah to the Colts' historic victory after the 37-year drought in the Triple Crown, will be here at 10:20. Also, later in the program, I'm going to give you the very latest from upstate about the great escape from Dannemora Prison. You remember, listeners to this program learned exclusively yesterday morning, at least 12 hours ahead of anybody else in the New York area, that it was a middle-aged woman who runs the jailhouse tailor shop who is the focus of the probe into who helped the murderous maniacs make good their extraordinary breakout. No word, right, Noam? No update? No
Nothing
sight.
At all, no.
And you had some neighbors there who evidently saw them in the backyard.
Can you believe that? Maybe just minutes after they were able to escape out of that manhole, they ran into this backyard. And these people coming home from a night out in town, just a date night, and they saw them in their backyard. And the wife said they didn't want to be identified. The wife said to the husband, go find out who those guys are. He did. He told them to get the hell out of their backyard. They did. Lucky for them. They just ran away.
So that, anyway, I'll talk about it later, but that kind of belies the notion that they had somebody waiting on the outside to scoop them up, if that report is true. See, I thought there was a car with a motor running and the doors unlocked, pointed either north to Canada or west to Buffalo or south here to New York. But it sounds like they were running around people's backyards. Maybe they are still in the area.
Either that or maybe the car was waiting for them a mile away. They thought, maybe we should walk for a little bit so no cameras capture
us. Exactly. I think you're right. I think you got it right on that one. Because the escape, just too well planned for them not to figure out how to make the, how to flee once they got out of the manhole cover. So we'll get the latest from our great source up there, the lady who runs the local newspaper. You can imagine how the prisons, there are nine prisons there in the Dannemora area around Plattsburgh, New York. So most of the people there work for the jails. I want to see what they have to say, about this pair. I mean, don't give them any romantic slack. I mean, they are real scum dogs. At 11:30 today, I'm going to be asking a question that the politically correct despise. Is all the attention being paid to Bruce Caitlyn Jenner creating more transgenders? Is this really a biological phenomenon? Is it totally a biological phenomenon, or is some of it the power of suggestion? I know people are born gay, but I don't know, are all of them born in a state of mind that causes some of them to want to alter their sexual identity? I want to ask about that, but I want to start with something more relevant and close to home, to more people. The scorching editorial in today's New York Post about the spike in gun violence and murders here in the big city. So far this year, according to the editorial, we've suffered 22 more murders than we did at this time last year. And the obvious question, obviously, is whether this disturbing uptick is related to the decline in the police tactics, stop, question, and frisk. I mean, we've debated it endlessly. The SQF that was used to such impressive effect during the 20 years that Republican mayors Giuliani and Bloomberg ran this town. Now, the question is whether this kinder, gentler approach that's been instituted by de Blasio, Mayor Bill de Blasio, and the liberal Democrats who now run, they control every aspect of government here in town, except for maybe Staten Island, whether that kinder, gentler approach is what's responsible for the increase in violence. It's not unusual that somebody would write a column about the uptick in violence. It is on the lips of so many New Yorkers. What is unusual is that it was written not by a concerned conservative, a critic of the current administration, but by Police Commissioner Bill Bratton himself. You know how I feel about Bratton. He's a highly regarded veteran. He brought calm professionalism to the decades that he's been running departments here, Boston, L.A. I mean, here, the first time around was 20 years ago with Giuliani. Basically, the commissioner in his column warns us not to get our panties in a bunch. The commissioner says that his critics are overreacting. I mean, what do you think, 866-ERELDO, overreacting to what is a relatively small increase in violence, that most of the violence, and you've heard this before, is in the context of gangbangers and drug crews killing each other. He says there's a plan to combat the increase, and you've heard about this one too, redirecting the desk jockeys from internal affairs, from legal, from the license division to street patrols in these violence-prone precincts. He also says, hey, wait a second, stop, question, and frisk still exists, but at levels that protect the constitutional rights of the mostly young minority men being inconvenienced by the probing cops. So Brooklyn gets 162 of the reassigned cops. The Bronx gets 134. A third of the officers will be patrolling the housing projects where a lot of this violence takes place. I was surprised about this, Noam. It's the North Bronx. It's the 4-7 precinct that's had the biggest spike. That's the community that borders Mount Vernon up there, Westchester County. 10 murders through June 29th. I mean, 10 murders just in that one precinct.
And it's not all gunfire, by the way. A couple of those were stabbing deaths. I think two or three of them.
I mean, 10 this year, just one during the same period last year. See, that sounds to me like there's a gang war going on. I mean, so in that one, I cut him some slack. So 40 of the cops will go to the 6-9. That's in Canarsie. Queens gets 17, all of them going to the 113 in Jamaica. Now, according to the commissioner, even with our increases in violence the past 2 years, the de Blasio years, have seen the relatively lowest levels in shooting since 93, the lowest levels in murder since 1957. So you can expect, that the critics jumping all over the commish, now accusing him of being a politician covering for the mayor who campaigned against the NYPD, according to the critics, to win, an overwhelming percentage of the city's minority vote and committing the cardinal sin of allowing Reverend Al Sharpton a disproportionate voice in how the city and the cops are run. You know, so you got a real situation here. Murders are up 20% since Mike Bloomberg surrendered the keys to City Hall. Still the rise, I mean, we got to be honest about this also, a tiny fraction of the homicides that have been happening this year in cities like Detroit and Cleveland and Chicago. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but Baltimore, 7% the size of New York City, suffered 12 murders this week. 12 murders this week in Baltimore. 7 in the last 3 days. 6 men, 1 woman, all black, as far as we can tell, or unknown, the race listed as unknown. 12 murders this week. I mean, just, if that was New York, that would be well over 100 homicides in New York if that was the same rate as in Baltimore. How many, can you figure how many we've had this week in New York? I mean, I know how difficult it is because they're so slow down at police headquarters. But if Commissioner Bratton says he's got it handled, I mean, I'm willing to cut the guy some slack. He's a real pro. But I have to say, if I lived in Canarsie or Jamaica or the 4-7 in the North Bronx, I'd call police headquarters, I'd call Reverend Sharpton every time there was a sound of gunfire piercing the night. I'm going to talk about this at 10:30 with your calls at 866-HERALDO. Coming up, though, the jockey we all want to hear from, Victor Espinoza, will be live.
Here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
It was great meeting Victor Espinoza in the bar at the 21 Club on West 52nd Street. He's a terrific guy. He was so charming. He's a veteran. We had him on the phone earlier. I want to get him back and get him to you. Okay, here he is right now, the winner of the Triple Crown, the terrific jockey who rode American Pharoah to that glorious victory before 90,000 screaming fans. Bienvenido, amigo.
Muchas gracias. Muchas gracias. ¿Cómo estamos?
Bien, bien, Victor. So tell me, what is it like to ride that horse to that victory? Describe the last few seconds of that race.
Oh, my gosh. Unbelievable. I was just a thrill. Well, there's so many people in there. They went, you know, ready to see a Triple Crown. And, you know, I know how they feel because, you know, for me, it was just an emotional thing that I never forget. I will never forget for the rest of my life.
Do horses know when they won as opposed to when they lost?
Oh, for sure. You know what? I've been here a couple of times, and my other horses, when they lost, they're like really like, you know, they're putting his head down, and they really don't have no energy to do anything. And with American Pharoah, his chest is up and his hair up and on his ears and like the whole, like his head is like shiny and it's just so proud.
So when you got into the stretch, that long stretch at Belmont, a mile and a half race, now were you conscious of the fact that you were that far ahead? Did you worry that people were closing? I mean, do you look backwards?
No. It's kind of hard because, you know, when we ride, we're on top, like basically just, like almost like my body is up in the air and we like have to connect our body has to connect to the horse. So whatever if I move my head back and if I turn to look back, the horse, it would turn. Whatever I move, my body moves, the horse moves.
So you can't distract your attention at all.
No, nothing. You have to just go focus and forward and our body has to be steady, which is pretty much move our arms.
Now, does American Pharoah recognize you as opposed to any other rider?
I hope so.
I mean, how does the horse treat you when he sees
right?
you? So does the horse, like, do you give him a sugar cube? What do you give him when he wins?
I don't know. I'm as curious as you.
So what happens to that great horse now? Do you think you keep racing him? Is it all in anti-climax? They put him out to stud. What do they do now, Victor?
As of right now, he's in Kentucky already. He's going to stay there for, I'm not sure how long, but the trainer and the owner, they're going to decide what they're going to do after, I think I was there 1 month. So far, they say they're going to run him, but, you know, things can change. The value of the horse is too high. They're at risk anything that happens to him in the race. So we have to just wait and see.
Where are you living? Where's your basic residence? I know you're originally from Mexico, but where do you live now, Victor Espinoza?
I live in California, in Sierra Madre, California.
So that's a relatively quiet place. What's it like to you to be in New York, to have all of those, you know, the tabloids all over your every move, your every, you know, word being questioned and re-questioned? I mean, what's it like? That kind of exposure, living almost like a rock star.
I know. You know what? It's not easy, but, you know, I'm just having fun. Life is too short to just, you know, not have fun. I appreciate every moment and every day that I live, and it just, everything is just beautiful.
You know, you were exceptionally calm. When I met you on Thursday, here's 3 days before the race that everybody in the world, less than 3 days, before the race that the whole world is watching intently. How did you stay so calm? You had a great personality. You have a great personality. It was terrific being around you.
Yeah, you know, I always not try to think about what's coming up and just, you know, go day by day and live it basically every second and enjoy it every second. And that's how, and don't think about it. That's why I'm not like, if you start to think about it, you know, maybe like a little bit, you know, stress here and there, but you know, when I'm outside and I'm trying not to think about my job, and when I'm in their job, I'm trying to think about some funny things.
So one of the things, not particularly funny, but certainly intriguing, was, is it true that you visited the gravesite of Rabbi Schneerson, the legendary rabbi out in Brooklyn?
Yes, yes, it is true. Uh-huh.
So tell me why. You're not Jewish. Why did you do that?
No, you know what? For me, it's something that I always want to learn from new things. I want to see new things. You know, for me, it's all about, you know, see things that I never see before.
So what was it? What kind of vibration did you get visiting the gravesite?
It is amazing because I've never been there, and I never know how to pray. I had no idea. I mean, you know, there's so many religious. I'm a religious guy too, but there is so many religious in this world that I'm just like, want to see. I want to learn some things, and I went there, and it's just amazing how, like, completely I learned a lot of new things.
Did it help you?
You know what? I'm not really a believer, but, you know, whatever helps for that day, it'll help.
All right. Right? So are you the big Romeo that everybody says you are now?
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh, right?
I mean, it sounds like a, you know, like they're describing a real stud there, a super stud.
Wow, man. Hey, listen, I want to be like American Pharoah after he retired. Right?
Ladies and gentlemen, the great Victor Espinosa. We're going to put him out to stud. No, we're not. He's going to run. He's going to win a whole lot more races. It was an honor meeting you, Caballero. I was delighted. And I thank you very much for coming on my show.
Hey, thank you for having me on your show. It's awesome.
All right, Victor. I started the program at 10 o'clock referencing the scorching editorial in today's New York Post. The editorial about the spike in gun violence, and there has been a spike in gun violence. There's no doubt about it. The unusual thing about the editorial was that it was written not by some conservative critic of Mayor de Blasio and his liberal administration, but by the police commissioner himself, William J. Bratton. You know, Bratton says, you know, basically, and I mentioned this, don't get your panties in a bunch, that the critics are overreacting to a relatively small increase in violence, that most of the violence is in the context of gangbangers and drug crews killing each other, and that there is this plan to increase the police on patrol by redirecting the desk jockeys from internal affairs and legal and the license division to street patrols in the violence-prone precincts. And they mention the 4-7 in the Bronx, the 6-9 in Canarsie, Brooklyn, and the 1-13 in Jamaica. Then our buddy Michael Goodwin went all out against Police Commissioner Bratton, and the headline in Mike's column today, A Warrior Signals His Surrender Amid Crisis. Michael Goodwin joins us right now on the hotline. So, Michael, welcome. Terrific to have you on board. So do you think that Bratton's off base here?
Good morning, Geraldo. Yes, I do. I was, frankly, very disappointed in the tone and the content of his letter or his op-ed in the Post, which seemed to me to be at best an explanation for the guns, the gunplay, as you say, gangbangers and narcotics gangs. That is hardly sufficient. I mean, that if you follow that to its extremes, well, we know who's doing it, therefore, what's the problem? This is old thinking. This is not the Bratton who helped turn around New York in the 90s under Giuliani. This is very much a council of defeat that maybe we won't be able to turn it around, but even so, it's not that big a deal. New York is still safe. I mean, how many times have we heard that sort of thing, drip, 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 don't worry, there won't be a flood? I mean, that is exactly what's happening here. And if he doesn't want to use stop and frisk, which he used in Los Angeles, by the way, and he used it in New York when he was here the first time.
And he says he's still using.
Well, they've cut it by 90%. And so he says that's not the cause. Okay, let's put that aside. What is your answer? What is the cause, and what are you going to do about it? Turning out a few desk jockeys, to me, if you really have those people sitting around doing nothing, why do you have that in the first place?
That's a good question. And you know, internal affairs and the licensing division and legal.
Yeah, I mean, we've had that debate in New York for 20 years.
Yeah.
Why do we need cops to do clerical work?
I agree with that. They should be civilian employees. But murders are up 20%. Since Bloomberg handed the keys of City Hall over to Mayor Bill de Blasio. But it is, in terms of cities like Detroit, Cleveland, Chicago, Baltimore. Baltimore had 12 murders this week. I mean, New York is, less than half that. Does Commissioner Breton have a point there, Michael Goodwin?
Well, I think if you want to look at it vis-a-vis the past or other cities, sure, you can rationalize it that way. But 20% is not a minor increase.
I agree.
Of anything. I mean, if your taxes went up 20%, if your medical costs or, if your pay got cut 20%, you would howl. So 20% is a big change. This is not a minor variation on a theme. This is now a pretty consistent increase all year. We're now entering the high crime, high shooting period of the year, the summer, and there's more gunplay. Why is there more gunplay? Are there more guns? No. I mean, why are they using the guns more?
All right, let me bring on, if I may, City Council member Jermoni Williams. He's a terrifically effective legislator. He's from Brooklyn. And Jermoni's on the line with Michael Goodwin of the New York Post and me. So, council member, welcome. You've heard what Michael has to say. You saw what Commissioner Breton said in today's Post. What say you? Are you concerned about the spike in violence, council member Williams, Jermoni, or do you think it's much to do about not much?
Well, thanks for having me, first of all. And absolutely. I've been concerned about gun violence even before I was a council member. I spent a lot of time trying to do what I can to address that issue. It's tough to hear people talk about stop, question, and frisk as if it was a program that somehow disappeared. It's not a program. It's a tactic that I've always supported, and the people who are working on the issues that I work on have also supported. But it became used unconstitutionally, and that was a problem. And we don't want that unconstitutional work to happen. We can ask, if we want to, if police are doing stops the way they're supposed to. A problem with that might be people like Michael Goodwin, when I was working on these issues, scared the bejesus out of police officers and told them that the laws we were passing would handcuff them, and nothing would be further from the truth. These laws did not say that police officers can be sued to lose their homes and lose their pensions and all kind of craziness. There's only been two lawsuits so far, and the only thing those suits do actually make change in the policies of the police department, not the individual officer. So what we need now is not the same hysteria that happened before, but some actual discussion about what to do.
Okay, Councilmember Jermoni Williams, let's hear now from Michael Goodwin, who, Michael, he had some pretty harsh words for you.
Look, with all due respect to the councilman, I think he's part of the problem. I think that he has been an anti-police vocal critic for years. I think he supported this legislation that allows the police officers to be sued, although it's not for monetary damages. That also was part of the law designed to further handcuff the cops. I mean, I think there's absolutely no question, there's no question that the police are under assault in the city and nationally. There have been some egregious cases of police brutality. But I think that only when it comes to the police do we say that every single case of brutality is somehow symptomatic of everything. We don't talk about political corruption that way. We don't talk about the city council that way. Every time a bad piece of legislation is passed, we don't say throw out every member of the city council, but the police are treated as though they are a one organic institution where everybody acts and behaves the same. And I think that just defies the truth and defies years of policing reforms and progress, including a much more diverse police force, and yet it never seems to stop, that the police are always treated as somehow they are the enemy, they are the problem. Who killed 333 New Yorkers last year? It wasn't the police.
Jermoney Williams, council member, would you please respond? And Michael, I thank you very much. Michael Goodwin is excellent editorial on today's New York Post. Go ahead, Jermoney.
Sure. I actually don't. Michael Goodwin may be a nice person. I don't have much respect for his reporting because it isn't helpful at all. He doesn't represent these neighborhoods, and I doubt that he even lives in these neighborhoods. I would ask him how many funerals of young black men has he gone to. I have lost count, and I am not anti-police, neither are the people who I work with on these issues. And again, he's talking about the laws as if it has to do with handcuffing. The only thing that handcuffed police were reports and editorials like Michael Goodwin put out that were not based in truth and are not based in fact.
All right, you know, both of you gentlemen, I'm out of time for this segment. If you both want to stay, I will gladly host the continuation of this debate. But I don't know your answer. Jermoney Williams, I hope you stay. Michael Goodwin, I hope you stay. It's 47 after 10. We'll be right back.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
Welcome back. Had an intense and unpleasant exchange there between Michael Goodwin, the conservative columnist for the New York Post, and New York council member Jermoney Williams, who remains on the line. Michael had to go. He's on deadline. But Jermoney, yeah, I like you very much. And I think you're an intelligent and sensitive and balanced in terms of politically moderate, not a radical person at all. But you have to admit that the relations between the city administration and the cops, Commissioner Bratton's editorial notwithstanding, is pretty bad. And a lot of cops feel that you're singling them out and demonizing them. What do you say, Jermoney?
Well, I think just back to dealing with Mr. Goodwin, his reporting and the mass hysteria that he puts out is part of the problem. So I don't think anyone would say I'm anti-black male.
But where do you see mass hysteria? Do you really see mass hysteria when people are concerned? When murders are up 20%, that's a concerning issue.
When we were passing the laws that he was referring to, everything that he put out made police believe that something would happen to them if they stopped someone and got sued. And nothing, no matter what we did, no matter what we showed.
So what was the purpose of your law? Help us out. I mean, briefly.
The law was to allow people to sue if they feel they've been bias-based policing. But the only thing it could do was make another change in policy. It could not take money or hold a police officer accountable in that manner.
Did the law pass?
Some people want it. Yes, it's been passed. There's only been two lawsuits because it's not for monetary gain, so an attorney doesn't have that monetary benefit from doing it. But they wouldn't hear us. All they would keep saying is police are going to be handcuffed. That's one. What I was saying was that no one would say is that I am anti-black.
But what would you do? What would you do to stop the increase in murder, though, Jermoney? Isn't that the question?
I use the same kind of strong language against gun violence when it comes to black on
black violence. Admittedly, but what would you do to stop this uptick in murder?
So, but the question is several fold. One, the stops reached a peak, and I didn't see any. When the stops went down and shootings went down, I didn't see the Post put a headline, shootings down, stops are down. So I don't know why they're doing those headlines now. Second of all, you can't put numbers on stops because you don't know how many numbers the police officer is going to see. If they see someone with a reasonable suspicion, you should stop them, probable cause, you should...
And then finally, briefly?
And then what my question is, I support the all night out. My question is, what are other agencies doing in those same communities? So this whole thing is not just left on policing. We see the problem of policing across the country when that's the only thing...
I'm out of time, Jermoney. It's a delight to have you. I'll continue the conversation in the next hour. 7 minutes after 11 o'clock. Welcome back to the program on this Tuesday, June the 9th. Still kind of a crummy day. Sunshine in the offing, Mr. Lee?
Yeah, tomorrow, sunshine 83.
Those escapees upstate obviously needed outside help to get the power tools to cut through the steel walls, the pipes, make that daring escape. The spokesman for the state police refusing comment on the possible female employee connection. But you know, if you were listening to this program, I spoke at length yesterday with a woman named Lois Claremont, the longtime well-connected editor of the biggest nearby daily newspaper up there, the Plattsburgh, New York Press Republican. The word in the region, according to Lois, is that the woman being questioned, a civilian employee in the prison tailor shop where the civilian and the two inmates work side by side altering uniforms, I guess, for Metro North. Joe Latemplio is the senior reporter for Lois's newspaper, the Press Republican, up there in Plattsburgh. 30 years on the job, Joe's covering this extraordinary story. Joe, welcome to WABC. So give me the latest, first of all.
Well, nothing totally new has happened yet so far. They're still speaking with this this woman subject, I believe. But from as far as I know, no arrests have been made. Sources tell me that they might be leaving her out there to monitor the situation to see if anything happens.
You mean leave her out there to see if anyone contacts her?
Exactly.
I get you.
Keep her in the works, so to speak.
Right.
But the two inmates are still obviously at large, and the massive manhunt is continuing again. And as I think I heard you mention, the weather is not great today, and it's the middle of black fly season up here in the Adirondacks.
Yikes.
So if they're out there, they're probably getting eaten alive.
So a Nome Laden Now reporter said that there was a purported eyewitness sighting of two perps around the time or the evening before. What do you know about that, John?
There's been 100 of those. 1 minute they're in Peru, 1 minute they're on the ferry, 1 minute they're in Vermont. Literally hundreds of those. Nothing has come of them as far as I've heard.
So are you suggesting that there is no credible eyewitness sighting of the two escapees?
We haven't found any to be at this point.
All right, this is Joe Latemplio, the senior reporter for the Press Republican. Lois said the general feeling there around Plattsburgh and the Dannemora area is that this escape so meticulously planned, there's no way that the escape plan ends with the opening of the manhole, that they must have planned for transportation once they cleared the hole. Joe, what do you know?
Well, obviously with a plan like that, which it is quite elaborate for sure, the word that we're hearing is that the getaway car, so to speak, never showed up or showed up and then left early. Maybe there was two of them that were supposed to show up. We don't know. But police are pretty much saying now that their ride never materialized, so that's why they believe they may still be on foot in the area.
So the feeling then is that here's two guys in the middle of, describe the Adirondacks there around Plattsburgh.
The Dannemora area, it's a mountain community, very small, very rural, in the middle of nowhere, and you got this massive concrete prison right smack dab in the middle of it. I don't know if you've ever been there or not, but
I have been there.
Yeah, you know, the huge concrete wall runs right along Main Street, and in the middle of winter when it's 30 below and snowing, it definitely looks like Siberia. But, you know, for the people that live up there, generations of them, it's just a way of life. They don't even think about it. It's just the prison where everybody works, and it generates a lot of income for the economy, obviously, and it's just a way of life. So this is like a big shocker for everybody.
Joe Latemplio is, I guess, the senior reporter for the Press Republican, the big newspaper in Plattsburgh, which is the biggest newspaper in the Dannemora area. What are you, 20 miles away from Dannemora?
We are actually from, I can get there in 11 miles.
11 miles. Okay, so is there fear in your community that they're going to rouse somebody out if they indeed they're on foot?
There's concern. There's definitely concern. You know, my wife and kids go to school up in that neck of the woods. My wife works in the school as an educator. And, you know, they've got everything. They're keeping the kids in the school. They're not letting them outside for recess or anything. And there's a heavy police presence there. So people are concerned. I mean, nobody's freaking out or anything. But, you know, it's definitely on the front of everybody's minds these days.
So what's your headline today?
We're still working on it. Hopefully there'll be an arrest.
But there's no tip, and you have no indication that they know where they are. Is there a feeling they're together still?
No, a lot of people believe that they did split up. There was no indication that they were real tight together in prison, although their cells were adjoining and they did work in the tailor shop together. But at this point, I mean...
So how did one get from one cell to the other cell to get out that hole?
That's another question that we're hoping to get an answer on. We don't know if it was just one hole or that would have reached both cells, or if they both had to do some cutting in there.
So is the woman in the tailor shop, have you named her in your paper?
Yes, her name is Joyce Mitchell.
And Joyce Mitchell, and she's in her 50s?
I believe so, yes.
And she's married?
Yes.
So did you hear the New York Post story that Richard Matt's endowment, physical endowment, is what lured or may have lured the woman into helping? I mean, did you cover anything like that?
I had not heard that, although, there are female employees in not only that prison but the several other prisons around the area. And from time to time you hear of these so-called prison romances springing up. And so nothing would surprise me.
I guess not. You could see maybe it'll be a Real Housewives of Dannemora Prison installment coming up. So Joe, just to wrap up here, no sightings, nobody knows what happened. They believe the escape vehicles did not make their appointed rounds.
Right.
And they believe, generally speaking, that the two perps are still in the general area around Dannemora.
That's pretty much the update so far. The search continues. There's hundreds, literally hundreds of law enforcement people in the area scouring the woods.
What did you make of Andrew Cuomo, the governor, spending so much time up there?
That was interesting. It's funny. Everybody felt bad that he had to miss the Belmont. But work comes first, I guess. But, you know, he went through the entire route that those guys went. And they provided the photos and everything, which was, you know.
Just before I let you go, Joe Lotemplio of the Press Republican, the notion that they use these power tools and nobody noticed is something that seems to defy human logic. How are you dealing with that issue?
That's incredible. I mean, who can believe that? I mean, how can you not hear that? Even if they use something to muffle the sound. I mean, something's amiss with that for sure.
And what kind of lead did they have before being discovered? How much time? I have conflicting reports about that.
About when they left?
You know, about how much time elapsed before they were discovered. How much free time did they have to get to, you know, to hit the road?
I'm according to the bed check intervals, I would say anywhere between 2 to 5 hours.
Only 2 to 5 hours?
Right.
So initial reports yesterday of 36 hours, not correct?
No, that's incorrect.
So 2 to 5 hours on foot, if they are indeed in that mountainous area, they couldn't have gotten very far. It sounds like that case out in Pennsylvania where the guy, the sniper, shooting at the Pennsylvania troopers.
No, unless they jumped in a car with keys in it and took off.
But no reports of stolen vehicles?
Nope, not yet.
And nothing from Canada?
Nope. And then they're being vigilant up there along the border as well. But there's a ton of places along that border where you can go across without being detected.
Yeah, but what do you do when you get there?
That's a whole nother matter.
Okay, Joe. All right, stay in touch, dude. I appreciate it.
You got
Congratulations to the Press Republican for your reporting.
Thank you.
Remember, they broke the story of the Taylor lady. I mean, not the endowment. I mean, uniquely, the New York Post talked about the guy's Johnson. But, it was the Press Republican who suggested that it was a civilian employee in the tailor shop. So you heard it, folks. Your guess is as good as mine. I want to swing back to, later in the – speaking of Johnsons, I'm going to swing – redirect the program at the bottom of the hour to the transgender explosion and whether or not this is this is an epidemic that we've just not recognized before. Maybe epidemic is a hysterical word. I got to be careful. But whether this is a trend that we've just not noticed before, Bruce, Caitlin, Jenner, is the news driving the people turning to transgenderhood or, completely reworking their sexual identity? We'll deal with that and your calls at 866-Geraldo. What's on your mind? We'll be right back. But she's all you'd ever-
She always knows her place. She's got style, she's got grace. She's a winner. She's a lady. Oh, 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 she's a lady. Talking
Tom Jones. I love Tom Jones. Met him a couple of times over the years, interviewed him. She's a lady. Bruce Jenner now. Caitlyn Jenner, she's a lady. I thought that Lindsey Graham, Senator Lindsey Graham, did an excellent job in welcoming Caitlyn Jenner to the Republican Party. I thought that was very broad-minded of him and one of those things that might make him stand out. But what I want to talk about, not in this segment, because I want to finish up on the whole Bill Bratton column in the Post and the spike in crime and you know, whether the it's a myth that we're experiencing this increase, this spike in violence, or rather than a myth that the whole city is being engulfed in violence. I want to talk about that first. But at the bottom of the hour, I really want to talk about the impact of Bruce Caitlyn Jenner. And I guess I have to stop referring to him as Bruce totally. I think it's inappropriate, right?
I think, yeah, her, Caitlyn.
Her,
right,
Caitlyn.
Right pronoun, yeah.
That's it. What's the impact? Now, will her dramatic story, which has generally speaking been amazingly sympathetically received by the, at least the politically correct aspects of the media, whether this will give people the courage to do something that they've been doing privately, do it publicly, or whether it will give kids an idea that whatever ails them is based on something that maybe is not biologically, physiologically a fact. But that's at the bottom of the hour. I want to finish up on the great debate. Before I do, just one note. Our pals at thedailymail.com are reporting exclusively that there is a convicted murderer named Lee Bates. Lee Bates is, he is on the, he is free because he turned state's evidence against Richard Matt. Richard Matt is the guy who murdered and dismembered his former boss and then killed an American in Mexico. He's one of the escapees. So anyway, this guy Bates was the evidence against Matt that got Matt convicted. Matt now is an escapee from the prison upstate. So the fear that this guy Bates has is that Matt will come after Bates because Bates was the snitch that got Matt convicted and sentenced to prison for dismembering his former boss. Sounds like Bates did the right thing to me, but I can also imagine how Bates is running scared now that the man he snitched out is in prison. So we'll continue to watch what's happening upstate. So what do you think? Where have we come in New York? Is Bratton right that this is just a statistical blip that will be dealt with an effective New York City approach? Or is this something that is deeply concerning to you, as it is to so many, that what we see is the harbinger of the bad old days, that trends begin relatively small, but to think about a trend is, once it gets going, it's hard to reverse. Frankie in Brooklyn's the first one to call, 866-HERALDO. Frankie, what's on your mind, buddy?
Geraldo, you're a gentleman, and I enjoy your show, and what I have to say is this. You seem to be not a spiritual man, but a man that's got a heart. And what I'm thinking is that, like, God helps those who help themselves. How do you maintain a culture that knows nothing but violence? Everything that surrounds them is violence. Neighborhoods, their social life, everything's around that. And the police.
Who's the them you're referring to, Frankie?
Pardon me?
What them are you? What do you mean? You're talking about race here or ethnicity, poverty? What?
Well, listen. It's where was the problem? Let's address that. Is the problem in Brooklyn on Prop C Avenue? No. Probably wouldn't get too many guns there. But let's come out of East New York. How many guns would we take off the street if there was a one-day sweep? How many people would still be able to say they're going to see the next holiday? I mean, like, I don't get it. Don't they see that it's something that has to be addressed not on a race-type issue, which is, where's the leaders? Where is Reverend Al? Where is any leader of the black community in this? They're not taking the stand. There's no money to be made in this for them. But once there is, things change.
All right, Frank, I got the drift now. You know, too easy to take that approach. And you see how defensive people like Charles Blow of the New York Times are. I'll talk more about that after Noam's newscast.
Your love lifted me higher than I've ever been lifted before. So keep it up, quench my desire, and I'll be at your side forever.
Happy birthday, Jackie Wilson. Would have been 81. Mr. Excitement. One of the all-time greats. So did you see Kinky Boots on Broadway?
I have not.
It's a great show. It's a great show. Basically, a guy is running his parents. He's watching as his dad runs this old family business, the shoe business, in the United Kingdom, in Britain. So he's running this shoe business, and it's going down the tubes. The shoe business is going down the tubes. So through a series of serendipitous events, the guy makes a pair of kinky boots for a transsexual or a transgender. Now, I don't know anymore what it is, but for, you know, a guy who's an entertainer as a woman, and he makes these tall boots that you see in all the advertisements, the spike heels, the sequins, the right. Bright red. And that becomes his niche market. He becomes the maker of kinky boots for transsexuals or transvestites or transgender, whatever you know. I don't know the nuances, but we're gonna find out. We got an expert coming up. But it strikes me that you have had in show business, you've had that person of usually a. Remember, even when Rudy Giuliani did the that Downtown Press Club event, he'd often come in drag.
Yeah.
In drag. Mm-hmm. So a lot of men dress up in drag. Milton Berle famously dressed up in drag. But Mike Flip Wilson, it is almost a tradition, a staple of show business. But I've never seen anything like the attention that Bruce Jenner has gotten in his declaration that he's really a woman. Nor have I ever seen anything like the acceptance, the unprecedented acceptance, the overwhelming sympathy, particularly given the undeniable fact of life that this is a Kardashian plot. I mean, it may be totally sincere on Jenner's part, you know, but I don't trust anything this family does in terms of sincerity. I just think that everything they do is manipulative. He's not a Jenner, Kardashian per se, but forgive me for being skeptical about some of at least the trappings, not in any way denying that maybe he really does believe that she is a woman. Anyway, I want to know, in the Times today, and the reason I even thought of bringing this up, last week's story, the Caitlyn Jenner story up, is how many transgender people are there in the country? Now, we've got a country of 340 million people. They estimate that the total gay, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender population is 3.5% of the 330 million people.
That high, wow.
So, I always thought that it was 10%. I always thought 10% of the population was gay, was born gay. I mean, that's the way I've always... So it's only 3.5%. That's the LGBT population. Only one-tenth of that is said to be transgender. And only one-tenth of the total LGBT community is transgender. So you're talking about... let me see here. So the total number of transgender people in the entire country, 700,000. total Americans that are transgender. In other words, men living in women's bodies or vice versa.
Can we assume that number is likely higher, that there are people like Caitlyn Jenner?
That's what I'm asking you.
Oh, okay. I would assume the number's much higher if there's people like Caitlyn Jenner out there who've hidden it their whole life.
There is no doubt, but that the 71%, now that you ask, 71% of transgender people say they hid their gender or gender transition to try to avoid discrimination. Betty Cohen, our buddy, specializes in the treatment of relationships, sexual problems, depression, anxiety, sex abuse, eating disorder, substance abuse. She's a well-known author, speaker, a national radio TV expert. Betty, help us figure this out. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, the numbers are certainly very confusing. And who would have thought that we would have been having this kind of conversation? But you know, Geraldo, I feel that putting out options is not a bad thing. I mean, for example, me, I never was concerned about what my gender was, what my sexuality was. But I know plenty of people who have to make the decision, am I straight or am I gay? And they went through a process, and that was a good thing. And now,
but straight gay, to me, seems that's more in the ordinary course of human experience than... Did you ever hear before, Betty, that gender is fluid? In other words, the old definitions, this is a man, this is a woman, are not absolutes, but rather, you know, majorities, but not by any means the entirety.
Well, that's the whole point. I think that we're being forced now to really look at gender on a continuum. I mean, I had two patients that I treated in my entire career that went through this process. One was a man who knew, and he told me, he knew from the time he was a little boy that he really felt that he was in the body of the wrong sex, went through the process, completed the process at around age 50, and transformed his life from somebody who was living in a closet to somebody who sounds like Bruce Jenner, who said he was free and he was able to really feel actualized. Another patient was born a woman and always felt that that was not who she was, and went through the process and became a man. And I agree with you about the Kardashians. You know, the Kardashians, it's always been about the money and about the image. But with Bruce Jenner, he's never struck me, and never treated him, never met him as someone who at this stage of life, I mean,
Why are you using the male pronoun?
Right. I have to get on the program.
Yeah. Okay. Betty, hold on. I'm going to take a call. Here's Gary in New Jersey. What's up, Gary? What are you thinking about?
I'm thinking about, I don't understand what is happening to the American male. What is going on here? We're becoming, I feel as though, like, people are giving kids a reason that if a kid doesn't feel a certain way, that this must not be the way he is. I don't agree with this. I don't agree we should be teaching it to our kids. I don't know why they keep force-feeding it. And for Noam talking about this kid in Long Island that's brave going to the prom in a dress, that's not brave. My brothers and sisters that are fighting overseas, making sure that ISIS doesn't attack America, are brave. The fireman that runs in and saves a kid from a burning house is brave. That cop that takes a bullet in the head, Mr. Moore, a couple weeks ago, that's bravery. What that kid's got going on out there is confusion.
All right, hold on. Betty, is it confusion or is it a eureka moment brought on by Caitlyn Jenner's... Gary, good call. Thanks.
Geraldo, I think it's both. And I think that people have to be free with a lot of support and a lot of information and a lot of education to figure out who we really are.
All right, whether or not the news is driving the phenomenon or whether the phenomenon is driving the news, we'll continue this discussion. Betty, please hold on. We'll be right back.
Live, local, on it, 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
Just give you a heads up, I'll be on the 5. I'll be one of the 5 on Fox News at 5 o'clock Eastern time, so check that out. We're talking about the Caitlyn Jenner effect. Is it driving an explosion in the self-described transgender population, or is it merely reflecting a reality that's been underground because people have felt that they would be discriminated against if they came forward and said they were really a man locked in a woman's body or vice versa. Here's Rob in Westerly. What's up, Rob? What are you thinking about?
Well, thanks for taking my call, and I'll be watching on the 5. I like you. I love you, man. Listen, I'm 65, and that is real old, but I'm old enough. I'm just, where's this going to end? How far does all this go? Are there any limits anymore? And believe me, I've got a judgment day coming myself. I'm not here to judge. I'm a little nervous on how far this gender and marriage and marrying what and who and is going to go. And I hope I'm not being like a nut here, but
I think your concerns are very, very normal, buddy. I appreciate the call and the sentiments. And let me go.
You know, before you do that, I just wanted to respond to Gary, who called before.
Gary, he really said some nasty things about you.
He did. He said, it wasn't about me. It was really more about this transgender teen out on Long Island
right.
who decided that he's going to go as what he feels, as a woman, to his high school prom. And he was suggesting that this kid wasn't brave and that brave people were firefighters and soldiers. And no doubt they are. But to suggest that a 17-year-old kid would show up in his prom at an address at high school is forgetting what it's like to be in high school and how brave that actually is. It's enormously brave to sort of say, hey, you know what? I don't care what anybody thinks. I'm showing up in a dress at my high school prom. I think that's enormously brave. How could you see it any way? I don't know.
Vidi Cohen, so what would you suggest a parent tell the 17-year-old who wants to wear the dress to the prom? Guy.
Look, I'm sure that the parent is having an incredibly difficult time with this whole thing, but I think that we have to get off our self-righteous and our fearful pedestals. You know, Geraldo, we really should have to open ourselves up, and we should not be afraid of knowledge. And I go back to Shakespeare, and I was not a Shakespeare expert who said that there are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, that are dreamt of in our imagination. And we have to be open to the possibilities of things that we ourselves may not be familiar with and we ourselves may be comfortable with. And I think that that's how a society, that's how we learn to love, that's how we learn to grow, that's how we learn to empower ourselves and gain knowledge.
Betty Cohen, well said to you and to Mr. Layton as well. Thanks for listening, everybody. I love you. I'll see you right here tomorrow.